I'm joined today with Ryan Betancourt, who is the co-founder of Cellar Thief, which is an online wine retailer with a really neat twist. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us today. Could you first walk us through what Cellar Thief's business model is?
Sure, absolutely, and thanks for having me. Cellar Thief is recently launched. It's a company that offers three wines at any given time. The premise is that choosing great wine is a very difficult thing for anybody to do, whether you know a lot about wine or a little bit about wine, because there are just so many wines out there. So we really focus on delivering three great wines at any given time that we hand select, and we work with importers, distributors, wineries to hand select those and feature them. They are offered for a limited amount of time or until they sell out. So we get small allocations of each of the wines. We sell them for a period of time. Usually it's anywhere from 24 to 48 hours. And then when that wine sells out, we wait till the next sale. The real passion behind the business is sort of twofold. One, about sharing great wines in a way that is not overwhelming or difficult to understand for the consumer. And then two, do so in a way that we really, really fulfill our other passion, which is to make a difference through our efforts. So for every bottle of wine we sell, we actually donate 100 days of drinking water for that bottle. And then we bring together the community such that if we sell out all of our wine for a given offering, then we make an additional donation that ranges anywhere from 50 days worth of water to 100 days, depending on the wine and depending on what sort of support we're getting from our partners. So it's our way of tying in our real passion for wine, our real passion for contribution. And we chose water because, you know, on the world stage, if you think about all of the things that we need to solve entrepreneurially and with creativity, water is one of those things that resonates with us because it's such a challenge that's easy to solve. It's cheap to create wells, it's cheap to contribute water, and it really, for us, is a matter of awareness and getting people just to take a little bit of a step, and that little bit of a step can make a huge difference. So that's our model as it stands today. We launched in January, so we're very new, and we have some big plans as far as how we're going to add to our business, but also how we're going to add to our efforts towards bringing clean water to the folks that need it in the world.
So let's start with the business element of it, because we need a business to have a socially driven business. I know that in an email you sent me, you said that there is a challenge that Cellar Thief was trying to fit, and the challenge was how to directly connect with consumers. And you know, when we create good businesses, we think about what we can uniquely bring to the market, what we can serve. And so how did you construct a business model around that challenge?
Sure. So you should know my partner, so there's me and another partner, and we've brought an additional partner in as well, but the founding partner and I were in the wine business for a number of years. I was in it for a number of years, and then actually went into the technology business. And my partner has been in the wine industry his entire career and comes from a family that was in the wine business, including his grandfather, who received one of the first liquor licenses post-prohibition. And it's interesting for us because I come at this sort of challenge from a technology standpoint, but also having been in the wine business and knowing and having a real thorough knowledge of some of the challenges that they face. And then my partner, Gordon, understands and lives the challenges of the wine business every day and has for quite a number of years. And just like social media and technology have sort of transformed all sorts of industries, it really has started to transform the wine industry for good or bad. So if you are able to ride the wave of social technology and what technology will allow you to do, it's a good thing if you're a winery or your wine business. If you haven't, it's not necessarily a good thing because other people are. So we see this real transformation happening in the wine business we don't see distributors going away by any means. We see distributors being partners to the wineries, and we see sort of online sites and marketing companies and media companies really allowing those wineries to be able to connect with consumers. So where we start, sort of the premise of our overall business from the business side is to transform the consumer wine experience through technology. So we do that through allowing wineries to connect with consumers directly, to learn about consumers. We share a lot of our information back with wineries, and we'll continue to do so by featuring wineries in a social way, and we'll be adding a lot more features that allow us to do that. So we started the business from the premise that smart wineries and smart wine brands really need to learn and figure out how to connect with the end consumer directly, whether they sell that wine directly to the consumer or they're still going to sell it through the traditional channels, they still need to build the relationship. And the key there is because tens of thousands of wine brands are distributed in the United States. If you go to any shelf in a grocery store in the United States that sells wine, you'll notice that it's completely overwhelming. So to be able to pick through that is very key and very critical. So we're both solving the problem for the winery side, but we're solving the problem for the consumer side too, because the consumer just has no clue how to pick through tens of thousands of wines to focus on just a couple to choose from, and that's where we solve that.
Mm-hmm. And is it partially based on the Woot model of, I mean, they have Woot products and T-shirts and now wine as well?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's partly based on the Woot model is partly based on, you know, a whole host of other concepts that are out there. Certainly, where you see Cellar Thief now is sort of in its infancy of our overall vision. But there's a whole trend in business right now online, which is really getting a lot of play and a lot of discussion around shopping as entertainment. So Woot, you know, started a number of years ago, has been phenomenally successful, and it really was the beginning of shopping as entertainment. But shopping as entertainment has expanded into all industries, into all sorts of different models, whether you talk about Groupon, getting, you know, sort of group buying of great, you know, discounts to restaurants and movies and theaters and other stuff, or you talk about Woot, or you talk about Gilt and their sort of sample sale online, or other kind of businesses like that. It really has its root in the overall trend towards making shopping interesting or exciting. A few years ago, I ran a digital agency, and as part of that, one thing that we were predicting at the time was as you move from sort of the first evolution of the web, if you consider it Web 1.0, to the second evolution of the web, Web 2.0, that you're going from a transactional experience to a social experience. So much of Web 2.0 is all about social. And we really think that a couple of years ago, we started to move beyond Web 2.0 into where you combine the first evolution of the web with the second evolution of the web, which is to make a transaction social, whether that be a sale or whether that be, you know, learning something online or whatever it may be, that we've entered this new area that people are trying to figure out, in which you combine that social experience, the ability for people to be involved and feel part of a community, with still purchasing something, because, you know, people still like to purchase wine and clothes and travel and a whole host of other things. So I think Woot is the leader and certainly was one of the pioneers, if not the pioneer, in making this entertainment and fun and whatnot. They certainly entered the wine business with that first. But we see larger trends that are shaping that we hope to ride and define as we are able to grow the business.
I think, well, something that I've noticed from a lot of the social enterprises that I talk to, including the larger, more established ones like Seventh Generation, is they talk about their the customer transactions as being, as you mentioned, having an educational experience or component or a social one in the sense of a social cause or some type of philanthropic enabling action to be really yep. worthy. And so that's an interesting component to the just simple transaction. So now getting into the social mission component of Seller Thief, why did you decide to structure it in such a blatant way, an important way? And yep. I don't mean blatant is, I mean it's positive. Why not just have, yep. okay, maybe we'll make a donation? And was this a hard sell for your partner or for any investors you might have had? How did you really come up with the concept?
Sure. So I'll be fully transparent because I think generally you're the people that read your blog and listen to a number of your discussions really operating from probably a similar place that we're operating from, which is not having a lot of resources, right? I mean, you have this
Absolutely.
Massive vision of what you want to do and what you want to be, but then you have the reality that there's only so many hours in the day, there are only so many dollars in your bank account, and there's a certain amount of time it takes to get any kind of attention in the market, and a certain amount of money it takes to build anything that gets attention in the market, right? So we really started, we started with this grand vision, and we kind of peeled back. So the grand vision we started with, the grand vision that we're working towards is a grand vision in which we really tie the community more strongly to our mission. Right now it's a little, even though it's, as you say, blatant that this is what we're doing, it actually, we feel, is not effective enough in showing that the community is really part of helping with what we've chosen as, the mission behind Seller Thief, right? So if you take that a little bit further, our grand vision really started with the idea that if you came onto Seller Thief just like you do now, that you would actually see how much the water is contributing to, or how much your purchases are contributing towards digging a well, and having the ability to actually see your purchases being able to dig that well, actually see once we fund that to people be able to participate in actually going and helping to dig that well, right? I mean, it's actually the community involvement aspect of the social mission. That's a great piece, and we actually tried initially to figure out how to do that on our own and, go directly and figure out how to build relationships with folks that we could go in directly and build wells with villages and whatnot. It's very difficult. We don't have the time. We don't have the money to do that. So we looked at how can we take a step in that direction. You're never, I don't think, a socially responsible company or a socially driven company. You're always working towards being that. You're always trying to improve towards that. I don't think you ever arrive there, right? You're always trying to improve little bits at a time that make a bigger and bigger and bigger contribution. So for us, it started as really wanting to make it blatant because we really wanted the community to feel like they were part of making this difference. And we didn't want to have it as part of our marketing efforts or our marketing initiatives because we feel that is doing it for the wrong reasons. So we have this grand vision. We have where we are now, given the realities of money and time. And we kept it, somewhat blatant because really we've learned, and I've learned through my background that people, if you do make a contribution, if you are part of an organization that is picking up its, customers and with the customers making a difference, that you have to make it really easy to understand how that difference is being made. And we actually think that's a real positive for the experience for us and for the customers. So there are a lot of great organizations out there that are making a great difference in just giving a percentage of profits back to an organization. For us, we think that's really interesting, and we applaud all the companies that do that. But we really feel like this community aspect can actually allow us to make a bigger impact if people have a really easy way to understand how one action influences another action, which is a positive action. As far as selling that to investors or selling that to partners, it's you know, I've been part of venture capital backed companies in the past, and we made a decision in starting this company to bootstrap it more than to go after large scale capital. So we have been bootstrapping the company. It's for better or worse. We've been bootstrapping the company. We have not taken outside capital. We're not pursuing outside money. So that hasn't been something that's been challenging to us. And as far as talking to partners, it has, you know, it has been a challenge. I mean, we donate our water through Charity Water, which is a phenomenal organization because their model is great in the fact that they are able to get outside really sponsors to cover the administrative costs of the organization. So 100% of your water goes back to actually, you know, 100% of your money actually goes back to delivering water to people that need it. Great organization, but there are a lot of great organizations that are working on interesting and innovative ways, you know, to get clean water into the hands of the people that need it. And it has been a challenge. You know, you're always stuck in the chicken or the egg, right? Because we're small, we're tiny, but we have big vision, and so getting the attention of some big brands is difficult until you're big enough. But sometimes having those big partners is what you need to be big enough, right? So I would say it's not the riddle we figured out yet, but we have been able to build alliances and relationships and partnerships because I think we're authentic in what we're doing and people recognize that.
Well, there's so much I want to touch on here. Let me start with a couple of, you just threw out all these great things that I've been meaning to ask you, but let's go back to the partnership with Charity Water. And once you decided that you really wanted to focus on access, giving more people access to clean water as a way to engage your consumers, among other things, how did you approach Charity Water, and how do you build that contribution into your business model?
Yep. So when we were looking at how to donate water, I think I mentioned we went, you know, we started from the standpoint that we could, you know, have to sort of do the wells ourselves and all of that and build it into actually the operations of our company. You know, if you think of like Tom's Shoes, I mean, he doesn't give the shoes to somebody else to donate. He actually does it himself, right? And so we kind of started with that ambition and then quickly realized there are many wonderful people that dedicate their whole lives to figuring out distribution, because so much of water is just about distribution. And so for us to be able to build a business and be able to figure out the riddle of distribution was overly ambitious, right? So we actually contacted a number of organizations, just kind of interesting. And I will say that we actually have the intent to work with other organizations. When we reached out for Charity Water, a phenomenal organization. They receive wonderful, wonderful support from both individuals and large companies. And largely, they've been so successful that you can't actually officially build a partnership with Charity Water unless you contribute quite a significant amount of money or time.
I was curious about that. Some of the larger charities have minimums that are quite high.
Right, exactly. So all learning experience that they have been, they've been wonderful to us to be very supportive of what we're doing. We set it up so that we literally on a daily basis calculate how many bottles we sell times the number of days of water we need to donate, and we actually donate the water twice a month through Charity Water. And we stay in very tight relationship insofar as communicating to them how things are going, how the business is going, how our water donations are going, et cetera. But as far as actually building an official partnership, because of their size, we're on our way to getting there, but we're not there. It'll take us really, you know, doing the things that we're doing now, which is regularly communicating our success, sharing when we, you know, get great press or we have sort of, you know, inflection points in our business, keeping them abreast of our ability to share water with them and, or through them. and our ambition is ultimately to be one of their, you know, one of their largest, you know, sort of headline partners. But we have a long way to go because we're tiny. So, you know, I think with any partnership, it takes a matter of time to earn the trust, and sometimes it takes a matter of logistics and sort of other administrative kinds of things that make a part like an official partnership real. We feel that Charity Water is that partner that we're excited to be working with and excited to, you know, build a stronger and stronger relationship with every day. But it just takes us, you know, time and growth and all of that to make us as good of a partner to them as they are to our efforts in giving great people water. So,
and so in
I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, and in choosing Charity Water as a partner, you get some great. Well, even as an unofficial partner, but you people understand that they realize that this is a credible organization that is contemporary and effective, and so even though you can't, the depth of your partnership is limited now. Did you see choosing them and the trade-off that you get in name recognition and credibility as overcoming the benefits of having a stronger partnership at the current time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I should say, I mean, I didn't sort of answer in your, you know, in my sort of previous answer that, you know, I've been in business development for a couple of venture capital backed startups, and you know, I sort of exercise that muscle of how you make yourself be very valuable to organizations that are, you know, a few cycles ahead of you, right? So that is something that you learn over time, I think. But I would say, you know, I would say for Charity Water is where we hope that a lot of organizations get to, whether it be water or anything else, which is, you know, getting out of the shell of thinking of yourself as a for-profit or nonprofit venture, right? Or a, you know, a venture that's defined by the social impact you make or the profit that you make. I mean, we really feel like Charity Water and others that have really been able to embrace social technologies, embrace popular culture, embrace partnership building, all of that is a huge trend that we hope that a lot of companies it's sort of embrace. And so for us, as we look at Charity Water, I mean, Charity Water is sort of the natural, because not only do they work on really giving people clean water, which is the mission that we have, but they also, you know, are kindred spirits in wanting to make a difference in a positive, more modern way, right? And so when you look at organizations that are, you know, using like Social Vibe, who's using great social technologies to, you know, drive action and energy. If you look at, you know, the folks behind Invisible Children and the stuff that they've been doing, I mean, all of that stuff is modern. It's a modern take on making a difference, and it's connecting with people that really want to make a difference, but might not necessarily react to, you know, the sort of typical way of soliciting donations or involvement. So, yes, I think being able to work with Charity Water both gives us the ability to have a channel that is built into our business model, which is so important. But it also gives us the inspiration of what they're doing and the sort of alignment in, you know, our own passion, both for water, but also for making an impact in a more social, modern way.
So it seems that you've got a pretty good sense of how to build in a social mission and social components into a business. Is this from reading about it, from going to conferences, from studying it, from trial and error in the past 6 months? How did you develop this type of understanding?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about some of this for quite a while. I mean, I was in the wine business a number of years ago, and I was passionate about the business, enjoyed my time in it, and I actually decided to go back to school because I wanted to sort of make a career transition or a change, because I felt at the time that I was doing something that couldn't sort of or wouldn't make a big enough difference. You know, doing wine auctions to raise money is a great, you know, sort of singular event that makes, you know, a valuable contribution, but it just seemed like the industry itself wasn't passionate and interested in really, you know, pushing the envelope of how it could have an impact. And it's a luxury product. It's a product that everybody has that drinks wine has a luxury of being able to drink. I mean, some people can't drink water, and here we are enjoying, you know, oftentimes expensive wines. And so I went actually back to business school really trying to figure out how to piece everything together in my own head. I had gone through an experience where I wanted to go to law school for human rights law, actually went through the process of doing all the things necessary to do that, and then realizing that with, you know, $150,000 in student loans, it's hard to take a $35,000 a year human rights law job. So out of that, I got into the wine business of all things, with some passion for that, and then went back to business school trying to sort of reconcile the profit and the business side of my passion with the other side of my passion of making a difference. So I went to business school and was a fellow and studied social entrepreneurship and social cause marketing and social cause businesses about 6 or 7 years ago. I entered school. And I have to say, I had a wonderful mentor who unfortunately is no longer with us. She's since passed away, but wonderful mentor who helped guide me in the thinking about social entrepreneurship and bringing some wonderful people to the school that I went to that, you know, had really been pioneers in these social businesses, like Gary Hirschberg from Stonyfield and a bunch of other people. And so I thought a lot about it for 2 years when I was in school. And I have to say, you know, at the time, it's wonderful to see how quickly people have embraced the fact that you can both drive profit and social good, and that they actually support the other being stronger. Because, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I was kind of the wacky guy in talking to professors and getting a lot of, you know, feedback from some professors that just having a profitable business is, you know, socially responsible in itself because it's good for investors and it's, you know, it's good to have jobs. And, you know, that was the argument 5 to 6 years ago. Right. That was the argument, is you as a business have the responsibility sort of to not think about some of those things and just think about how to be financially sustainable. I think that has radically changed in a very short amount of time. And in my work 5 or 6 years ago in school and learning about how, you know, MBA programs are really adding curricula to the business school curricula around social entrepreneurship and other, you know, social impact programs, and seeing some of the stuff Aspen Institute and others were doing, I was energized, you know, very energized about that. So I've been thinking about this for a while. When I was at a digital agency, we worked with a lot of organizations that were actually building their business around that and helping them understand how they build those things into their own business. And I, you know, have worked for sort of mission-driven venture capital-backed companies. So I've been thinking about it for a while, and I have this, like I said earlier, I mean, there's this grand vision. And so for me, looking at what Seller Thief is now, I'm not proud yet because I have this grand vision of, you know, what it can be and the impact it can have. But, you know, I think we're going in the right direction. So for me, it's
built on, go ahead.
No, go ahead. There.
Well, I was just going to go back to starting small, because I think that's something I wanted to dig a little deeper on, because you've mentioned it, and it's something that a lot of socially minded entrepreneurs face, because as you said, they have this vision. They go and they start this business and they go through the blood, sweat, and tears of it because they want to satisfy certain needs, and then there's just limited time and money. So how did you work to narrow your focus in the beginning, and do you have like a timeline to extend it, or how are you at once narrowing your focus and then allowing it to push forward your grander vision?
Sure. So, I mean, it's really difficult, right? I mean, it's a real challenge. You have to be driven by the passion of it, because, you know, at the end of the day, we have to be as good or better than anybody that sells, you know, wine to our target consumers. I mean, we have to be as good or better. We have to have relationships that are as good or better with the people that we buy the wine through to share with our customers. We have to be as good or better at our customer service than anybody out there. We have to be as good or better at the design and the usability of our site, which is, you know, a daily thing that we have to work on. So you have to be as good or better at the components of business, plus you have to be as good or better at making contribution in a way that you're passionate about. And it's a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous amount of work. But I also do think that there are a couple of things that happen when you start small that I've become a pretty strong believer in, having worked, you know, with sort of large scale outside capital. You know, on the business side, when it's your money or your lack of money, you know, everything that you do, you see how it impacts your profitability. And it does mean that you grow slowly. It does mean that we really have little to no marketing money to spend. I mean, we really depend on getting our word out through people that are, you know, excited about what we're doing and asking them in a friendly way to help spread the word, right? But it takes us a lot longer to scale than if, you know, if we had the resources to go out and tell the world about what we're trying to do. I also think on the, you know, the social contribution side, you know, if we had somebody that was only able to think about that on a daily basis, right? I mean, I think we would be better at how we tie the community better into the difference that we're trying to make, right? And other aspects, and be able to spend a lot more time on, you know, blogging and talking about that side of our passion, right? But it's, we at the end of the day only have so much time and so much money. I am a believer in bootstrapping a company at least to a certain point. And I am a believer in starting small at least to a certain point. And I also am a believer that if you do things right, that you can stay small and be very successful, because you can be profitable, you can make a big difference, you can, you know, sort of keep some level of control over the decisions
that you
make.
They're very
exactly.
About staying small.
Exactly. So, it, you know, it's tough. I mean, I will say it's very difficult, because the thing that I don't, you know, in full transparency, the thing that I don't think that people think enough about when you start a business is that your life goes on, right? I mean, I have two young daughters. We live in California, which is not an affordable place to live. You know, your life goes on while you try and scale something. And so if you choose to start small, if you choose to make a difference, if you choose to, you know, really try and push with what you have, your life goes on, and, you know, the bills don't go away and the other things don't go away. But hopefully you've chosen something you're passionate about that makes it okay, you know, some of the struggles that you go through. And hopefully the little things that you do, you are able to do, because you're closer to your customer and because you're closer to your supplier and because you're closer to those who you actually make an impact with, that translates into, you know, a more sustainable trajectory that you grow to. You know, you grow to a good size. But it's, you know, like any business, this is still an experiment, right? I mean, we're still an experiment of, will people be willing to work with us and when we're still really small? Will, you know, can we continue to get incredible wines at great prices and be able to deliver those to customers in a great way? Will we be able to make a larger and larger contribution that the community of Cellar Thief feels like they're actually participating in making that difference? You know, it's every business is kind of an experiment, right? And when they're small, they're easier to sort of tweak this and tweak that to see how the experiment plays out. And so, you know, I think we're happy that we chose this route.
Do you have a mission statement that guides the expansion of your business and your social mission?
We do, but it's always evolving. So, you know, I think right now I wouldn't be able to say in clear articulation what both our business and our social impact missions are, because they evolve. You know, I learned quite a while ago that business plans are critical and creating a mission statement is critical. But that, you know, the minute they kind of come off the printer, they, you know, they evolve because your thinking evolves. So we do have our overarching mission of to transform the consumer wine experience through technology. So that is our business side mission. And what that means is what you see at Cellar Thief is, you know, small, is in its infancy of what CellarThief.com will be. But we also have, you know, a beta running of another concept, and we have another concept that is rattling around in our heads that we're trying to determine, you know, do we go after those things. On the social mission side, we really follow, I would say, you know, what socially driven companies embrace, which is to understand and promote that a well-balanced triangle of purpose is what's needed to build a sustainable company. And so what we mean by that is you have to have profit because it allows you to keep going. You have to take care of the planet because it's what keeps your business possible to keep going. And you have to take care of people because people are what drives economies forward and businesses forward, right? So we have that big mission, and then we have the reality that we're a tiny, tiny, tiny company that, you know, is just trying to make our bills, right? So
sure.
that thinking always evolves. I should also point out, because I think I'll shut up because I think I'm talking too much. I should point out that I said I went back to business school kind of wanting to be doing something that has, you know, a really strong impact, and that I wasn't getting that out of the wine industry at the time. I should point out that the wine industry has come just leaps, has come such a long way since then. And I've been part of pieces of that and not part of pieces of that. So, you know, the evolution to organic that happened in the food business, you know, the wine industry really pushed well beyond that to the sustainable winemaking code and, you know, these audits that wineries can do as part of that code to self-audit themselves against, you know, environmental impact and as well as the social side, because, you know, there are a lot of people that work within a winery to make wine. The wine business has come a long way, and as so far as packaging, and there's still a massive shipping, massive amount of shipping done in the wine business. So trying to minimize the cost on the environment as much as possible with that. And the wine industry is really thinking about those things and has thought about those things very, very well in the last, you know, 5 to 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Do you have other initiatives that you have in place now that are for that are sustainable, environmentally, socially sustainable, or other ones that you're thinking about doing that you can talk about?
And that's not
a mean to pressure. It's just a means to give you opportunity to share things because.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, they're the easy things that thankfully the wine industry has embraced, which is, you know, packaging that is all sustainable packaging, right? I mean, that's the easy stuff, and the wine industry has gone a pretty good distance with that. You know, being part of the conversations about how you make that more sustainable, and you know, I think some of the challenge with having both the social mission and having a profit mission is that sometimes you try and do too much. So I would say, you know, 5 months ago, we really felt that we could create the next generation of packaging for, you know, cold products or products that need to stay at a certain temperature, like wine or other products that need to stay at a certain temperature. And we actually did a fair amount of research and work specifically around creating some packaging using nanotechnology and a series of other stuff to be able to reduce weight, to be able to reduce the amount of material that's used, to be able to strengthen it so that the, you know, the shipping materials were stronger, could be reused more, a series of other things. And, you know, that ambition still we'd love to figure out. We unfortunately don't have the time. There are a couple of things right now that we're trying to figure out how to do that we do think are very important. One is the way that we have our business is that you can mix and match three bottles, and if you mix and match three bottles, it's cheap shipping. That's great, right? Because people can they can just pick a few bottles, and it's great for them because, you know, it's easy in, it's not that expensive to grab three bottles. You can get it shipped. The shipping is cheap, which is one of the biggest things, you know, that is a struggle with people buying wine online and other things. But the challenge is that what we've noticed is that our best customers will buy three bottles, three bottles, three bottles, three bottles. And whereas that's okay, it's actually pretty, you know, detrimental, right? Because you're repackaging, you know, that's four packages, that's four boxes instead of one if they were to buy a case. It's shipping four times, which means additional, even though the weight is the same, you're still taking up space and you still need more planes to fly, right? So one thing that we're
thinking
trying to figure out right now.
Consumer behavior to be different.
Right. Right. So what we're trying to figure out right now is within an easy consumer experience, how we can allow people to say, oh, those are the three wines today. I want three of those, right? Or, oh, I want three today. I'm going to grab three tomorrow, and I'm going to build myself a case. And then once I've built myself a case, then I ship it. So I'm only using one box. So then we're only shipping once. And whereas that has a, you know, that's the perfect example of, you know, the triangle, right? Because it's a better customer experience to get one shipment. It's cheaper for us to ship 12 bottles than it is to ship four three-bottle boxes. And, you know, we eat a lot of the shipping costs, right? So that's better profit-wise, and it's much better for the planet, right, because we're shipping out one time instead of four times. And then, you know, they're the other easy, you know, things where there are systems in place to help with carbon offsets and, you know, some of those things that are, they're easy things that are in place, that they're systemic, that are systemic, that you can, you know, you can contribute and make your business more sustainable by just, you know, being part of those. So it's, you know, as I said before, we're not a sustainable business. We're not a socially responsible business. We're working towards being that. And we're, you know, because it's like when you first go to college and you think you know everything, and then you realize the more that you learn, the more that you don't know, right? It's the same thing you go through a business, is the more that we do and learn about the things that we are doing positively, the more you learn about the things that still need so much improvement, either on the business side or the social impact side.
And how do you deal with that? Because it's like, if you start to look at your shipping or your supply chain or all these things, I mean, it's just a domino effect of things that could be done better, that could be very much out of your control at the present time.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I think the way that you
start out narrowing your focus, I guess. I'm sorry, I'm answering a question.
No, that's great. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think I think it's like any big goal that you have. You got to take the big goal and divide it into a bunch of pieces. And, you know, part of the way that we kind of deal with it is trying to engage our customers. So what you don't see when you go to SoloTeeth.com is, I think, probably the biggest part of our business, which is we have very active conversations with our customers.
Tell me about – I was going to ask about what you hear from your community. So, yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd say one of the biggest challenges, you know, going to some of your earlier questions about lack of resources, is we haven't built in enough community tools to allow the community to interact with each other. It's something that we're working on now. And is just, you know, a function of needing to bootstrap things, right? But what we do have is a really rich conversation with, you know, a lot of our customers. So we're still tiny, but we have a lot of customers that have been inspired by, Seller Thief, or they've resonated with it, or you know, they've brought a lot of friends in to, you know, be a part of the community, and we get such wonderful feedback from people, both in terms of, you know, we love what you're doing, we're happy to be able to buy our wine and feel like we're making a difference, but you know, equally or more important is people really giving us incredible suggestions and feedback of things that we can do, and people taking the things that we're doing and spreading it into their own, you know, into their own areas. So there was, you know, there was a woman in North Dakota who was so excited and sent us a wonderful message because, you know, there's only so many things we can do to touch things. But she bought some wine, donated that wine that she purchased through Cellar Thief to fund sort of a local issue that needed to be addressed, and that was her contribution to sort of pay it forward, right? And she emailed us wonderfully and shared that story with us, and that the people that were there loved that she had made that contribution, and also that she made that contribution because, in some way, she was, you know, given the opportunity, their inspiration to make that. So, you know, so much of our business happens behind, you know, all of it, which is the emails that we get back and forth, the phone calls that we have back and forth with folks. And that, you know, people really do want to make a difference. People really do hold businesses up to a very, very, very high standard that claim to be socially responsible. And so, you know, one thing that I learned a number of years ago when I had a friend that started a restaurant, and his whole thing was, you know, sustainable foods and giving back and everything, that he came under tremendous scrutiny because he considered himself, you know, having arrived at social responsibility. And you never do, because, you know, maybe the napkins aren't right, or, you know, something isn't right, and you fall under tremendous criticism. The big conversations that we have happen with our customers through emails and phone calls, and us saying we have so much to learn, we have such a big vision, but we have to, like, put one foot in front of the other and sell wine to get there. And so how can the community help do those things? And how important is it for our community in the social side of the stuff that we do? I mean, we just had an opportunity to talk to our whole customer base, and we got tremendous feedback. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have people that run the entire spectrum of people that buy wine from Cellar Thief because there are three great wines that they know that we hand selected, they know we tasted every one, they know that we're hand, you know, packaging every single wine, and they're getting it at a really nice price, and that's what they care about. And, you know, the benefit of the water is something that they don't even really think about. And then there are, you know, the other side of the spectrum that, you know, they don't even really know wine that well, and they don't really buy that much wine, but they're starting to learn about wine, and Cellar Thief is the only place they would buy it because they vote with their purchases, right? And there are people all the way in between. And so for us to have those conversations, that's how we learn what's important to the community. And hopefully the community defines how we make it a bigger difference instead of, you know, the five people that are in the business now.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the larger vision? I know you had mentioned it from the beginning and having to scale back and put some of those ideas on hold. But
yeah. Yep.
Speak about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, our larger vision really involves, you know, a couple key additions to what you see now. On the social impact side, with what you see now with water, is we have two big sort of visions that we want to accelerate as quickly as possible. One is that we really do feel like that we need the community to be much richer on Cellar Thief to be able to better embrace, you know, everybody making an impact. So if you think about the great, you know, the great businesses that resonate with people. I mean, the fact that you can buy Tom's shoes and then you know that a pair is going back, and then you can actually go on the shoe drop. To me, that's the biggest impact, right? Because you actually can see and be part of and feel like you're part of this business. And to us, right now, even though we've made it very clear on what specifically we're doing in the sale of each bottle, we have a much grander vision that people can be, you know, that people can be more involved, that we can actually sell a wine that 100% of the profits go, because it's a cellar thief wine that we source ourselves, and 100% of the, you know, proceeds go back to delivering clean water to folks. We have a vision that we'll actually get out of just 100 days to actually showing through social media, through the ability for us to capture these stories, showing how close we are to, you know, to actually being able to build a well and actually being able to take those stories back to our community, so that they actually are seeing firsthand. You know, we're taking one step that you buy this and you contribute that, but actually being able to see it is our bigger vision. We also have a very big vision that if you look at, you know, one thing that we're kind of exploring is parts of Africa that need water and parts of Africa that you can tie your passion for wine with your passion for making a difference. So we do actually have a vision that at some point we would like our community to be able to earn, based on purchases, the ability to go with us. You know, if we can get ourselves to a point that we can actually do, be able to work with Charity Water and other great organizations to build wells specifically just from the difference that we're making on a regular basis, we would like to combine those passions in being able to, as a community of people from Cellar Thief, as a group, go to Africa, start in South Africa, go through, you know, some of the wonderful wineries there, and then go work with villages to actually, you know, bring clean water as part of that same experience. And do the same things in other parts of the world that need it, that also we can combine people's passion for wine. So we, you know, cliche and cheesy and whatever, we really are trying to, you know, turn those wine purchases back into water, turn, you know, wine back into water, and have people feel good about getting great wine, but also feeling good about that they're really actively involved in that. So that's really on the social, you know, on the social mission side. It's really getting our community to embrace it more. On the business side, you know, if you take our business mission is such that we actually see that what we're doing right now as Cellar Thief is a very, 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 very small part of our vision. Of if you look at how the wine industry is transforming, there's tremendous opportunity there. There's tremendous opportunity to allow people to actually be involved in the winemaking process and be involved in the brand building process. And so basically, you know, be, you know,
threat. And would that be similar to a type of community supported agriculture or vineyards where you can buy a plot and have various services taken care of for them?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean, that is part of sort of our planning is when we would, you know, when we would sort of look at doing that. We actually have run some tests on how to do that in a social effective way, because we think that it's not so much getting the end product and just being able to, you know, see that you have this little plot of land or this little plot of the vineyard or whatever. It's actually the education process. It's actually the decision-making process of, you know, a group of people or an individual that can learn about, you know, the process of winemaking, actually make decisions about that process of winemaking in such a way that they feel like they've made that wine, but they have somebody guiding them. So that they, you know, the finished wine isn't garbage, right? It's just the style that they want, not whether it's a good or bad wine. So we have ideas there. We have ideas certainly around how to make the experience of buying wine more in line with this, you know, shopping as entertainment trend that you're seeing. We actually, again, transparently, we actually started the concept of, you know, we, I would say, you know, 8 months ago when we started, actually, or a year ago when we started, like, piecing together everything, we actually started with framing out the site as being one of those sort of private shopping sites, right, that you have to be a member and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, and be behind sort of the veil of you know, being public. And we made the decision to make social impact. We didn't want an exclusive community, right? We didn't want it to feel like, even though it it's largely just marketing that, you know, just the fact that it seems exclusive. We didn't want the fact that it seemed exclusive. We wanted it to be open. So we made that shift. But we're, you know, we're constantly figuring out how to evolve sellerthief.com, but also, you know, how to take advantage of the things that we are learning about where, you know, there are opportunities.
So I have a couple of questions about bootstrapping and marketing, but
yeah.
I'm going to try to combine them because those are
okay.
both big areas, and I know we've been speaking for a while. And ask, how have you been doing your marketing? How have you been handling marketing? Has there been anything worked for you specifically with a very low or minimal budget for it?
Yeah. So, you know, Mark, I would say, you know, you say, how do you deal with all the things that need to happen? I would say that the one thing that is the biggest difficulty for us is that, for better or worse, marketing always seems to be the thing that gets left out as we're trying to do all the things that we're trying to do to build the business, which you know, I ran marketing for a couple of organizations in the past. I, you know, generally have a good sense of marketing, and I generally, you know, have gotten somewhat efficient at it. But we don't actually spend much time on marketing at all. And it's something that, you know, drives us crazy internally because we need to. We just don't. I mean, the most effective thing that we, I think, have done is that we have built something that has, you know, some reason to talk about it. And when I say that, I don't really mean the social impact piece. I mean, you don't do that. You don't do that for the marketing. You do that for the authenticity. I more so mean the experience of it, the experience in the look of the site, and really figuring out, you know, who is it that has conversations that there's room for a conversation about Seller Thief, right? That's what we focused our energies in. So if you think about who is it that has room for conversation around Seller Thief, it really is, you know, creative types, because our site doesn't look like any other wine site. You know, I mean, and we've gotten tremendous press and pickup from creative sites, from sites that are, you know, sites for web designers or graphic designers or others, which you wouldn't think would be a good, you know, target market for selling wine. But the thing about those individuals are the ones that are defining the web, and those are the ones that are defining the next generation of the web, and they're the ones that are talking. So there's room in there because those people weren't talking about wine. They were talking about other things, and I think we've gotten into those conversations by, you know, really just reaching out and being, you know, being authentic to them and being part of hopefully some of their conversations about stuff that has nothing to do with Seller Thief. You know, that's just interesting to talk about. I would say, you know, PR, like, we don't, I mean, obviously we're bootstrapping. We don't pay a PR firm. We don't have any money to pay anybody to help us with that. But what we lose in that is we gain in having authentic reach outs to people that, you know, we're passionate about what they're writing about. And we think that there's room within that conversation to talk about. And then, you know, the big thing that I would say, and I have to sort of listen to my own advice because we don't do it well, is that everything that you do, you have to have a reason for doing it, right, in marketing. So, you know, the first thing everybody does is they get their Twitter account, they get their Facebook account, and they get their YouTube account, and they get their Flickr account, and they get all these accounts just because they think they need to get accounts, and they just put a bunch of stuff out there, and, you know, people will find them. But, you know, we aren't doing well enough at this yet. But you have to have a reason for tweeting and being on Twitter. You have to have a reason for being on, you know, Facebook. You have to actually create conversation rather than it being sort of one way. And then once you do that, people will start to find you. And sort of the last thing I would say is you have so many areas that you're talking to customers, potential partners, or people that you could align with. And most people don't ever think of those points as points that they can actually use as, you know, as a marketing vehicle, as a conversation starter. So, you know, and again, I don't do this well, but in emails, you know, you should include your Twitter and your Facebook and your email, even though right now I'm not doing it. We ship boxes, and a lot of boxes every day. We created little interesting sort of cards that were pass-along cards because we think people are, you know, kind of sick of getting email after email of somebody that obviously got, you know, incented to refer this. So we give these little cards that people just pass along. We send birthday cards to people if we know their birthdays, right? Because that's what we can, you know, that's what we can do. And, you know, it's all those little touch points that you have an opportunity to talk to somebody. And if you have an authentic conversation, that conversation will get passed along.
So it's interesting when you, because you were mentioning that marketing gets left out, and I think that's somewhat true. I think it's particularly true for socially driven businesses because there is a feeling that, well, it kind of will advertise itself, it'll take care of itself, and that's really not the case. It still needs to be marketed.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, I just want to, we're going to wrap up soon, but I wanted to bring up something that I kind of picked up on with two things you said, and it seems like that you are a little bit hesitant. Well, you are hesitant to talk about the social mission and the water that you support as really a verbal part of your business, even though I said in the beginning it was blatant on your site, and that was a lousy word to use. But I think that, you know, as long as the reasons for you doing it are sincere, which they are, and one of the things that I thought was interesting is when you talked about shipping, getting incentivizing customers to ship in cases. I mean, that's really not something that looks like a flashy, oh, hey, here's why I'm going to go to this site. It's almost, if it's not done well, it's kind of a turnoff. And so that really shows the initiative that you're taking to be more sustainable, even from behind the scenes. But I think it is important to really talk about and our social missions, because now I will certainly choose your site over others, and not so I can show my friends, because I really want to support businesses who have a mind to this. I don't know. It's just something that I've heard other people struggle with, and so I just wanted to.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a struggle, and unfortunately, it's a struggle because there are people that have, you know, used it specifically as a marketing tool, right? That is a contribution, and you know, I still struggle. I mean, I thought about this for a couple of years almost every day when I was studying tons of other businesses and, you know, sort of doing a lot of case studies and whatnot about the challenge, and I think about it still today, which is, is it a bad thing or is it a good thing, right? I mean, is it a bad thing if somebody's using it as a marketing vehicle, but it actually, through those efforts, actually makes a really big impact? Is that necessarily a bad thing because everybody wins, right? But I don't know the answer to that yet, so I'm very careful not to, you know, I'm very careful to make sure that anything that we're doing is coming from an authentic place before we talk about it, because I think if it's coming from the wrong place, it'll just come off as sort of marketing, a marketing shtick, and you know, I want to be careful with that. But I think the fact that I'm hesitant and nervous about that is, one, it's a little bit sad, and two, it is, you're absolutely right, is that, you know, as long as you're coming from an authentic place, as long as you're doing what you're saying you're going to do, and I think as long as you constantly are trying to do a little bit better and a little bit better each day, then it should be something that you share with your customers, because it should be, you know, it should be something that customers buy from Seller Thief instead of somewhere else, because we're making that contribution, because what we're trying to do is actually make a bigger contribution, right? So if we're not talking about it, we're limiting our ability to do that by not talking about it. So it is absolutely a fine line, and delicate, and, you know, I mean, I appreciate your articulation of it. It's something we struggle with pretty regularly.
Yeah, I can see that, and I really understand your question. I have the same question about if a company does it just for marketing purposes, but there's still good that comes out of it, then how do we feel about that? I mean, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. I know it's not what I want to do for myself, but I'm not ready to to totally criticize others.
And
I think one more point about localizing your mission is that it creates an echo effect, and that's something else I learned from Seventh Generation, is by kind of pushing out what they did in an authentic way, they forced others in the industry to follow suit.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're pointing out something that I'm sure I'll be thinking very strongly about, because it's what happens is if you don't have the conversation and you don't talk about it as part of your business, it actually limits your ability to have the conversation with the other people that are working, you know, about it, or working on things themselves. So that echo effect is something that you really limit yourself from having if you don't talk about it, if you're not part of those conversations. And so much of the web now is open dialogue and open conversations. And it's open dialogue and open conversations about, you know, what is your business, what is your passion, what is your mission. And, you know, if you share that fully, then you have conversations that are around those missions and those passions fully. If you don't, then you don't, right? I appreciate you challenging us with that.
No, it's interesting. I'm going to be putting together, I'm starting to develop a guide for small business owners, how to create a purpose-driven business. And one of the things I'm including at the very end is kind of this moral dilemma that some of us struggle with
right.
Putting together profits and cause. And it comes from both people. I mean, it comes from people who are saying profits shouldn't be mixed in with cause, and it comes from the other end of saying cause shouldn't be mixed in with profits. So there's still just a lot of discomfort with that in the public viewpoint. Ryan, I want to just end on a lighter note, which is your website is stunning, and I will put a link to it in the interview. Can you share who did the design for it?
We can, actually. Yeah, it was, we actually did a different design. Part of where we got delayed, we were actually supposed to launch in time for Thanksgiving, and we didn't launch until January. And part of that was we had a wonderful designer that did the first sort of design, but it didn't fit what we were trying to accomplish. And so we had a friend of mine, a guy by the name of Chris Decatur, who's just like wildly creative, wildly innovative guy that does performance shows and whatnot. And he goes by the name of Chris, and he spent a lot of time and energy really trying to create something that still, you know, you're buying wine and still it has, you know, the energy and the feeling of wine, but that it, you know, it's different. That you see it, you know it's different, and that can be good or bad if you're a consumer of wine, because you might not want it different, or you might. But Chris did a spectacular job, and we work with a great team of engineers and still do, and we still work with Chris, but it's a great team out of St. Louis. So we put a lot of, you know, sometimes the other thing that you wrestle with when you're bootstrapping something is go to market as quickly as you can and then get feedback and have conversation around the things you can improve versus do as much as you can at launch, so that you put your best foot forward. And we struggled a lot with that. And it delayed us quite a bit because we reiterated design so much and it took so long, and we reiterated the consumer experience so much, and the user experience. But we still, you know, we have so far to go in the user experience to improve it, that, you know, it's never perfect.
No, that's such a hard thing, something I've struggled with, and I think just about every entrepreneur does. It's really tough to launch with something that you know is so far from perfect.
Yeah,
your ultimate vision. Ryan, I really appreciate you taking all the time
to talk
with us today. And is there anything else you want to leave us with? Well, before I let you, I'm really excited again to see the development of this, because I think it's something that people as fellow entrepreneurs and as customers can really relate to. And I really appreciate you bringing us into the progression and your vision for the future.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been wonderful to talk. And, you know, the I guess the thing that I would sort of leave with is the wonderful thing about entrepreneurship to me is that you can take any challenge and you can align a group of people around figuring out how to solve that challenge or that problem in interesting ways. So as we look at the wonderful organizations in the world, they're both nonprofits and they're for-profits. And there are so many entrepreneurial for-profits and so many entrepreneurial nonprofits. And so as you think about the wonderful entrepreneurs in the world, as you think about what opportunities need to be challenged and solved, whether they be clean drinking water or giving people, you know, good wine at a decent price or anything that you think, the process, the talent that it takes to do it, the energy it takes to do it is all the same. So I would love if as a group of people we stop thinking about for-profit, non-profit, we stop thinking about, you know, profit versus social impact versus anything else, and we just think about entrepreneurship and its ability to solve things well and create wealth, whether it be financial, human, or social, for the world in easy and creative ways. I think we get too hung up in semantics and language, and we should just let ourselves be open to solving problems in creative ways.
Well, Brian, thank you again.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.